Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, the editor of Turbo Machinery International. And today's episode is structured a little bit differently. We are featuring an interview with Daniel Tegmeyer. He is the director of Ethos Energy's Performance Center. And the interview was recorded on our Turbo Tour in August in Houston with our assistant editor, James Cook. So Tegmeyer discusses remote monitoring and operations, kind of the changing energy landscape with renewables / turbines, and then the benefits of remote start and stop and virtual capabilities. So let's just jump in and hear from Ethos Energy's Performance Center Director.
So with the capabilities of this technology, how does remote monitoring keep simple cycle assets viable in a market that's increasingly focused on renewable energy?
So if you think about a machine that was built, 20 plus years ago, and its efficiency, they have a place when they're competing with the renewables and these sorts of things. They have a place in the market, but it's not like they used to be. These units used to run wide open 24/7. It's not like that anymore. Yeah. They're intermittent assets because they're competing with renewables. They're competing with zero cost fuel. So they have to compete against those. So how do you make those viable? Because you need them. Because the moment that the sun stops shining, the wind stops blowing, that load's gone. So what are you going to do? These are simple cycle configurations, and so they can come online fairly quickly and be at 100 to 120 megawatts in, less than an hour's time. So they are, that's their viable assets in this market, but they just run a lot less than they did before. So you're going to staff a facility 8,000 hours a year just in case they call you up, right? So that's part of what we do in the justification for remote operations, is because you need the intermittent load from these simple cycle assets and rapid fashion, but you can't afford to staff those places full time.
And in addition to that justification, would you say there are any safety improvements delivered through remote start, stop, and control capabilities?
So economics seems to drive the most decision processes behind whether you're going to remotely operate a facility or not. However, there is a huge safety aspect to this because you don't have people there 24 hours a day around equipment that has a lot of energies that need to stay pent up in the machines, right? So your exposure level is dropped dramatically because they don't have to be there 24 hours a day. And because for the most part, these machines are designed so well and over-engineered from day one, they're conducive for this. I think when they were first built 20 plus years ago, nobody ever imagined that they would be remotely operated, right?
Yeah.
But they also didn't think that more than half of the power that in this country would come from a renewable energy source. And so when you still need that intermittent load, yet you're competing with those, it only makes sense to go after a group where these assets only run a few hundred hours a year. So what I can do now, because I have the talent that we have within the Performance Center, is I can take several few hundred hour a year plants, yeah, and we can run them from here or with one person, than having people rotated around the clock at plants all over the country. Costs that up to have people man those sites 24 hours a day when the units barely run.
And I know you touched on it a little bit, but you kind of went through the steps of how you're able to see what's going on at a plant. Beyond where we are right now, what do you think the next steps are for, remote monitoring and control?
Yeah, one of the biggies, and I, like I said, touched on it, but diagnosis and prognosis.
Uh-huh.
Historically, there's usually a large group behind all of this that does the prognosis and diagnosis.
Uh-huh.
So really where I see, a lot of people are afraid of AI and ChatGPT, I really see that could be a revolutionary step, because all the issues are collected in historical archive,
yeah,
right? But even today, if we weren't smart with all that information, we'd have to go and dig, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I know I saw that, or I have to go to the history of that asset and say, we saw that 5 years ago.
Yeah.
If we do this the right way and we take AI and ChatGPT and these sorts of things and you bring them into the fold, now it tells you.
Yeah.
So you don't need 50 engineers in the background, because you can go and get all the historical references, brought there, ask it a question, say, hey, the last time we saw this, what did we see? It'll go grab that information itself, bring it to you so that you can do more with less.
Yeah.
So it's about increasing the efficiency of what we do here, and then what we can do long term with fewer people. Because you know that's how you remain viable in this type of environment. Is you can't just keep adding people to diagnose more problems, right? Is you have to leverage technology when it's available to diagnose problems faster. But that's one part, is being able to have, you know, AI, ChatGPT, these things work for you. The other part is make specific recommendations and tell us what the impact is of not doing anything about it. Because that's always an option, right? Yeah, I'm sitting here, I'm at a plant, and I'm juggling all these problems. Which one's the biggest problem? So help me summarize or apply a value proposition to that failure mode. What is the highest risk? What are the things we need to be running at right now as a plant manager, based on all the data you're being fed? Help me make that decision. Because experience is dropping dramatically. We're way behind the eight ball. They talked about this 20 years ago, that we're going to get behind the eight ball. We're way past it. The eight ball, way down there, right? And so we're there right now. So experience is gone. They've all retired. And so you're either waiting for experience to catch up the old-fashioned way, or you allow technology to help and assist in making decisions.
A fantastic solution, you know, for, you know, monitoring plants, controlling plants. But are there any drawbacks from working with AI or machine learning algorithms, or other things that, you know, you have to figure out that aren't exactly clear?
You know, the biggie is you still need to have somebody that can question the machine, right? So just because a computer says it doesn't mean it's always right. You hear about ChatGPT solving math problems incorrectly. So you still have to have some sort of oversight that says, okay, let's look at the accuracy, the historical accuracy of the recommendations that it provided. Because if not, you could easily steer people in the wrong direction because they put too much trust, too much faith into the machine that's fed them this data. So that would be one of the things that you'd have to, you know, caution people like Ray. And, you know, what we do to combat that is we apply experience, right? So even no matter how smart the software is, everybody that is in this space in Ethos Energy has between 20 and 40 years of power plant experience. So if we have those people backing up what the computer's telling them, right, what the engine's telling them, then they can use their discernment based on their experience to say, it's wrong. And then you adjust, then you adjust, then you adjust. Eventually, you've got a really solid solution that not only has can make those recommendations, but it's been vetted by hardened, you know, industry profession.
Technology, it seems so, you know, like you said, you're batting 1,000. It seems so common sense to integrate some of this stuff into, you know, operations. Is there, is the industry slow to pick this up, or do most, you know, companies start, have they started using this technology?
You know, there's a few out there, right? One of the biggest challenges is culture. So we've always had people at this facility. I've had this conversation with several, but do you need to have that many people at that facility? And it's funny, I've gotten in recent discussions where there's a plant that's infrequently operated, but they staff it 24 hours a day. They have people available to go and start the machine. These people are earning doctorate degrees on shift, master's degree, you know. So these people are not doing anything. They have nothing to do. They're just sitting there in anticipation that somebody might call to start up. So if you think about the resource utilization, so the reluctancy is really a cultural thing more than anything. But, you know, for this customer that we remotely up, because these plants aren't owned by us, right? They're owned by a private equity, and then we operate their assets for them remotely. But you have to give them positive experiences that this can work. And the legacy mode of operation is not the only mode of operation where you have humans staff facility 24 hours a day. There is other ways to do it. I mean, we've even gone so far to offer some of our customers drones in a box that can go and do an automated round every single so often. It could do it 50 times a day if it wanted it to, much more than a human could do. And be very deliberate in what it targets when it goes out there in anomaly detection. And then you can put seismics and thermal cameras on these drones as they're flying around the site. And then if we just want to see something, we could take control of the drone from here and go to whatever we want to see. So you have to change the experience for the owners of facilities, because it's a lot of money they have invested in these. And so the idea is if you can change the experience, you'll change the culture. And so what we hope to do with remote ops, and by presenting it as a viable option, because we've been presenting this to customers recently. Some of them didn't even know that this existed. that you could even do this with these kind of machines. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, 100 megawatt machine is not a tiny machine, right? We have seven of those and one smaller machine that's only 25 megawatts, but that's eight machines, billions and millions of dollars. So people are like, well, we kind of want a human to look at that. They are looking at it. They're just looking at it different than what you're accustomed to.
Yeah.
So to your point, the reluctancy is more of a cultural thing because it's about shifting the way that we've always looked at these. We really have to look at these as how do we make these intermittent assets more viable in a market that's infiltrated with renewable energy. How do you do that? And remote ops is how you do that. Really, the growth, the reluctance of people to take this on is 100% because of their culture, because of the culture of remote ops, and people are afraid of it for some reason or another. I think the cameras are very important for people to know, radio systems, dispatchability, because these guys play dispatcher, right?
Yeah.
When we need some, because there are things that happen. If we lose a ready to start on any of these machines, we've got to call people out to the site to go to the plant, get our ready to start back. But if you think about that, if those same people could cover 10 plants in a geographical region, they would have a handful of people scattered over 10 plants rather than a handful of people at each of the 10 plants.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of, you know, fiscal sense.
How does Ethos Energy strike a balance between using software and human staffing for its operations and maintenance work?
We don't want to be inhuman about this, right? It's like, yeah, you're going to fire a bunch of people and then you don't have to have those people there anymore. That's not what we do.
Yeah.
So the business case that we make for our customers is that you can, as attrition runs its course and people retire, to Ray's point, you have a harder discussion about whether you're going to replace that person or not.
Yeah.
And so a recent analysis that we did, I mean, you could actually cut staffs in half at some of these geographical regions where you have shared resources in a certain area.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have as many people as you did before. So, but I'm not saying go fire everybody. I'm just saying part of your business plan, you anticipate when people will attrition out.
Yeah.
And then don't replace that position.
Yeah. No, that was one of the things I was kind of, you know, mulling over. I'm like, oh, there could be an argument made, you know, from some of these people that essentially ML, you know, algorithms and AI and remote monitoring replacing human jobs. But when you put it that way, you know, just don't hire, you know, after that certain experience.
The people at these facilities are qualified for an exceptional amount of positions in the world that will still need a human to take that spot, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the thought process is they don't have to stop being in power plants. It's just what they do with power plants is a bit different than what they were doing before. There is a lot of machines on the other side of those screens, right?
Mm.
They still need to be worked on. They still need to be calibrated. They still need to be. So it's about honing your skills and adding to your skill set. And then you could be one of the people that works on these machines, right? Because it's not about, an operator can be trained to do some of the PM, these sorts of activities that still have to occur.
Yeah.
The maintenance doesn't stop. Preventive maintenance doesn't stop. None of these things stops on the machine. You still have to do that, or when we hit the button, it's not going to go. So, you know, but you can have this pool of people, resource pools that could actually be dispatched. So the other part of it is, if you really want to get sophisticated, there are still some manual processes at some of these plants.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have inlet conditioning or something like that, they may have manual valves.
Well,
put an actuator on those valves, put them in the DCS. That way you don't need to send a human out to open a valve, a 1-inch ball valve. Why are you, you shouldn't have to send a human out to do that maneuver. So it's another way that we can further improve our ability to remotely operate seamlessly without the need for human interaction at the facility.
Mm.
And the only times humans need to be involved is when something doesn't work.
Welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview and content. Be sure to check out our November-December print issue that features more from our Ethos Energy Turbo Tour. And also check out online at turbomachinerymag.com/videos our video interviews with Daniel at the Performance Center, as well as with Philip Booth, the engineering manager of the Light Turbines facility in Houston. So thank you again for tuning in today. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, and we will see you next time.